In May 1953, local newspapers reported a series of strange incidents involving a girl locked up in what is now the Manila City Jail. "Girl detained by police is bitten by unseen foe" was the title of an article in the Philippine Herald. "Attack on girl by thing unnerves mayor of Manila," said the Manila Chronicle, and "The thing bites girl again," reported the Manila Times. The thing they were referring to was one of two demonic entities that tormented the girl for 2 weeks. This is the story of Clarita Villanueva, the first widely documented case of demonic possession in the Philippines. Clarita Villanueva was raised by her mother, who was a single parent in Bacolod, in the Visayan province of Negros Occidental. It was the late 1930s, and Bacolod wasn't the highly urbanized city that it is today, so life was hard for Clarita, especially since her mother only made a living telling fortunes and holding seances in what was then a deeply Catholic city. It only became worse when World War II erupted and Bacolod was occupied by the Japanese in 1942. The number of people who believed in spiritualism and wanted the services of Clarita's mother dwindled as everyone was forced to stay inside their homes or go into hiding. The war raged on, and in 1945, the city was finally liberated by joint Philippine and American forces. But just 2 years later, when things were starting to look up, Clarita's mother suddenly passed away. There seems to be no record of what she died from, but her death made Clarita an orphan at only 12 years old. Clarita had no immediate family in Bacolod to take her in, but she had always wondered about her father, as she grew up not knowing whether he had simply left them or was already dead. She wanted to go to Manila to search for him, but she had no money of her own and there was very little that her mother had left her. So she fell into sex work, which allowed her to eventually save enough money to fund a trip to the Philippine capital. Even though the country had already gained complete independence from the United States, Manila was still being rebuilt from its devastated state during the war. Getting a job to pay for a place to stay in was difficult enough for someone like Clarita, who didn't have any formal education or even connections to recommend her to prospective employers. She was forced to put aside the search for her father. Some say she resorted again to sex work in order to make a living, while others say she worked as a maid and then as a dancer. Either way, she ended up being a vagabond until the early morning of May 9, 1953, when Clarita, then 18 years old and sleeping on a street corner in Malate, was arrested for vagrancy and sent to the old Bilibid prison. The Carcel y Presidio Correccional was established by the Spanish colonial government in 1865. In 1940, its prisoners and facilities were transferred to the new Bilibid prison, which had just been fully constructed, and the Carcel was renamed the Old Bilibid Prison. It was used to hold civilians and prisoners of war captured by the Japanese during World War II, and subsequently Japanese war criminals from the end of World War II until 1953. Its walls had witnessed many horrible scenes of torture and death, but none as dark and mysterious as what they were about to witness in the cell Clarita Villanueva was locked in. It was the evening of May 11, 1953, 2 days after Clarita was detained, when she started screaming in horror and fainted. When she regained consciousness, she told her cellmates and the prison guards that she was being attacked by two men. The men were repeatedly sinking their teeth deep into the flesh of her neck, back, arms, and legs. Clarita was showing everyone the bite marks when suddenly she moved her hands wildly and screamed, as if trying to shake off something that was on her. She then collapsed into the arms of those around her, and everyone could see that there were indeed bite marks on her body. She couldn't have given herself those bite marks, they thought, or at least not the ones on her neck and back. But there weren't any men around Clarita, as she was in the women's division of the prison. So if she wasn't the one hurting herself, then who and where were those two men she had mentioned? When she was conscious again, Clarita explained that her attackers were evil-looking men clothed in black. One of them was small, with an angelic face, snow-white hair, and a big mustache, while the other was large and dark, with a deep, echoing voice, sharp fangs, and curly hair on his head, chest, and arms. "They weren't exactly men," said Clarita, "more like demons intent on tormenting her." and they did torment her every day, causing her to writhe in her bed, screaming in pain and sometimes crying, as bite marks appeared all over her body. She seemed to enter a trance during these attacks, which sometimes would make her violent with the cellmates and jailers who would come to her aid. This daily scene caused quite a stir inside the prison, and it had everyone wondering whether Clarita was truly being attacked by demons only she could see, or if she had simply gone mad. Father Benito Vargas, the prison chaplain, was called to observe Clarita, but despite seeing her manifest three bite marks on her body, he said it was not his place to conclude any verdict. Police medics and other witnesses, including Dr. Abelardo Lucero of the Manila Police Medical Legal Department and his brother, Manila's Chief of Police, Colonel Cesar Lucero, were also puzzled by Clarita's case. On May 13, Clarita was brought to the prison hospital for observation and treatment. About 30 doctors and interns witnessed Clarita manifest two new bite marks on her body. But they couldn't explain how those came to be, so they sent her back to her cell after treating her wounds. Later in the evening, Clarita went into a violent fit when her cellmates refused to give her water. She took an aluminum cup from a windowsill and drank from it even though it was empty. She then grabbed a small statue of the Holy Family displayed above one of the beds and was about to smash it on the floor, but her cellmates prevented her from doing so. 10 minutes later, Clarita became violent again when a policeman who had arrived told her he'd like to challenge her supposed demons to a gunfight. She only calmed down when the policeman was sent away, then said, while still weak and trembling, that the demons would be at her bedside again at 2 in the morning. On May 16, exactly 1 week after Clarita's detention, a doctor named Manuel Ramos came to the prison to interview her. He was shown inside her prison cell by Chief Jailer Captain Antonio Ganibi. Dr. Ramos accused Clarita of faking the demonic attacks in order to get attention. Clarita stared at the doctor with snake-like eyes and in a low, whining voice told him he will die. Those who had witnessed this thought nothing of it until the following day when they found out that the perfectly healthy doctor had died of a heart attack. Everyone held their breaths when they heard that the chief jailer, Captain Ganibi, had been cursed similarly by Clarita the day before. Clarita had asked him if he had seen the small metal crucifix she normally wore on her dress. He told her he hadn't, to which Clarita responded he must have it on his person. The chief jailer turned out his pockets, showing that they were empty. But after he had replaced them, Clarita told him to check them again. Ganibi was getting impatient, but that feeling immediately changed to terror when he put his hands in his pockets because in one of them, inexplicably, was Clarita's metal crucifix. Clarita smiled eerily and warned him in a low whining voice not to worry her like that or else he will die. After the death of Dr. Ramos, the question on everyone's minds had become whether Clarita was no longer just being attacked by demons but being possessed by them and made to curse people. Fortunately, unlike the skeptical doctor, Captain Ganibi was still alive the next day. Although broadcast television still didn't exist in the Philippines that time, Clarita's demonic attacks had been getting featured in newspapers in and out of the country. Manila Mayor Arsenio Lacson worried that this was portraying Filipinos in general as being mentally unwell. So on May 18, he ordered that Clarita be brought to the city morgue for a psychological evaluation. Lacson and Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Mariano Lara, along with a few other doctors and reporters, braced themselves for what they were about to see. Within 15 minutes of Clarita arriving, she began screaming that she was being attacked again. She writhed in pain while she was seated, then she laughed as if she was being tickled and explained that the things were taking turns biting her. Lacson, who was sitting beside Clarita and holding her hand to calm her, noticed what seemed to be a human bite mark appear on her neck. When he let her hand go, he noticed another bite mark on her index finger, which had previously been without any wounds. Clarita repeated her description of what she said were the two demonic entities that had been tormenting her. When she was asked to draw them, however, the pencil she had been given flew from her hand as if it had been taken from her by an invisible force. Despite all this, Dr. Lara declared Clarita to be mentally sane, but he still had no answer to how her violent fits and the bite marks appearing on her body could be stopped. So the following morning, on May 19, he had Clarita examined by other doctors inside a special room in the prison, in front of 100 reporters, professors, and other medical specialists. Among the examiners were Dr. Zaquire and Dr. Gaduco, psychiatrists from the Insular Psychopathic Hospital, or what is now the National Center for Mental Health. When Clarita went into a trance, Dr. Zaquire pricked her with pins which she didn't seem to feel. He observed a bite mark on the right side of her neck, possibly made by molars, although the wound was too large and round, not elliptical like a human bite would be. Clarita said she was being punished by a large, dark, and hairy but handsome man who had been appearing to her often and telling her to do things. When she was given a pencil and paper to draw the man, she bit and chewed the paper, then tried to bite the pencil before it was taken from her by the psychiatrists. After further examination, Doctors Zaquire and Gaduco concluded that Clarita was suffering from a mental disorder called hysterical fugue, or hysteria psychoneurosis, and the bite marks on her body were being imprinted on her skin by her own mind, possibly as a way for her to dissociate herself from the dark reality she had lived so far. Such a condition, however, has never been proven, if it happens at all. Even today, the worst dermatological manifestations that stress and other emotional factors can exacerbate, not create, are psoriasis, herpes, hives, and warts, not wounds resembling bite marks that go deeper than the skin. Other medical experts present that day also weighed in on Clarita's case. One doctor said it was malnutrition causing her to become violent and delusional. A member of the Manila Police Department's medical staff said it was plain insanity and that she was probably biting herself during epileptic fits. An army psychiatrist from V. Luna General Hospital in Quezon City agreed with Drs. Zaquire and Gaduco that it was a case of hysteria psychoneurosis. But Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Mariano Lara wasn't satisfied with any of these explanations. He had come to believe that what was happening to Clarita was the work of unearthly beings. Among the crowd watching Clarita get examined that day was an American Pentecostal pastor named Lester Frank Sumrall. Since Sumrall married in 1944, he and his wife had been on a missionary tour all over the world, and they were in the Philippines building a church when news broke about Clarita's demonic attacks. Sumrall heard the story on the radio and followed what he strongly felt was God commanding him to go see Clarita for himself. Through his Filipino architect and building contractor who had connections with Mayor Lacson and Chief Medical Examiner Lara, Sumrall obtained permission to see Clarita after agreeing to be careful and to not hold the mayor responsible for any injuries he might sustain. When Sumrall arrived at the old Bilibid prison, he heard from some guards about a funeral procession that had just moved out. It was for the chief jailer, Captain Ganibi, whom Clarita had cursed 4 days before. After hearing about the mysterious deaths of Ganibi and the skeptical Dr. Ramos, Sumrall was convinced that Clarita was not just being attacked by demons, but was possessed by them. When Clarita's examination in front of the large crowd was over, Sumrall joined Dr. Lara and a smaller group of people inside the prison chapel where the preacher had been given permission to speak with Clarita. When Clarita was brought inside, she observed each person in front of her, and as soon as she caught sight of Sumrall, she screamed violently in English that she hated him, and she uttered curses at Sumrall, God, and the blood of Christ. Sumrall had her sit on a bench. He drew a chair in front of her, sat on it, and said to her, quote, "Clarita, I have come to deliver you from the power of these devils in the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of God," end quote. And thus began his 2-day exorcism of the demons inhabiting Clarita. Sumrall alternated between praying to God and singing sacred songs, while Clarita alternated between meekness and violence, 1 minute saying she was submitting to the will of God, and another cursing God and Sumrall and telling them both to go away. Tears streamed down Clarita's face as new bite marks appeared on her body, too pronounced not to be seen by all the witnesses in the chapel. The first day of the ritual ended at around noon, after the demons inside Clarita agreed to stop biting her but also refused to speak with Sumrall any longer. Some of the witnesses thought Clarita had already been delivered, but the sweaty and exhausted preacher told them otherwise, and then he went home to fast and pray. At around 9 a.m. the next day, Sumrall returned to the prison chapel with two other Protestant pastors, Arthur Alberg and Robert McAllister, who had offered to help him with Clarita. There were even more people inside, but as they couldn't keep the crowd out anymore, Alberg and McAllister just helped to keep the people at a safe distance. Sumrall continued the exorcism, and after a while, he finally felt the two demons release Clarita. But just when he, Alberg, and McAllister had started rejoicing, Clarita screamed that the demons had returned. In reply to Sumrall asking why they came back, Clarita said in English and in a low whining voice, quote, "She's unclean and we have a right to live with her," end quote. The demons at first resisted Sumrall's words, but they eventually gave up and left Clarita once more. They returned a third time, however, telling Sumrall through Clarita, quote, "She has not asked us to go. She wants us. It is only you who desires for us to leave," end quote. After another battle that ended with the demons leaving Clarita again, Clarita's face and demeanor softened as if a terrible burden had been lifted from her shoulders. Sumrall recited the Lord's Prayer and Clarita joined in. She smiled after they finished and said that the demons had finally fled, but Sumrall warned her that should they come back while he wasn't around, she must demand in the name of Jesus that they leave her and never return. It was around noon again when they finished, and Sumrall ordered that Clarita be given food and left alone to rest. At 8 p.m. that same day, Clarita, who was back in her cell, asked a prison guard for a pocket knife to cut her nails with. The guard offered to cut her nails himself, since inmates weren't allowed sharp instruments per prison regulations. As the guard was cutting Clarita's nails, she let out a blood-curdling scream that she could see the demon standing behind the prison guard. She moved her arms wildly in front of her, as if struggling with an invisible force, then her hands clenched and stayed still, as if they had been bound. She asked the guard to remind her about Sumrall's instructions in case the demons returned. Fortunately, the guard had been present during the exorcism, and he told her to pray for deliverance in the name of Jesus. Clarita collapsed after praying, and her cellmates immediately laid her on a table so the prison doctor could examine her. Her hands were still clenched tightly, and when the doctor pried them open, there were tangles of coarse black hair about 2 inches long on her palm and under her fingernails. Dr. Lara later examined these hairs under a microscope, and he found that they didn't match Clarita's hair. In fact, they didn't seem to be human at all. He didn't want to believe it, but he could only assume they came from the demon Clarita was fighting with. Despite the mysterious hair incident, Sumrall's exorcism of Clarita seemed to have been successful. He was able to weaken the hold of the demons on her, and Clarita's very own act of rejecting them and praying for deliverance finally severed the connection. Mayor Laxon asked Sumrall if there was anything he could do to repay him. Sumrall said he only did the work of God, but he had in fact building plans for the church they were constructing in Manila that had yet to be approved. Laxon signed the plans and asked if there was anything else he could help with. Sumrall said he would like to preach at the park in front of the Manila City Hall for 6 weeks. The mayor was hesitant at first, but he eventually agreed. The church that Sumrall had been building was the Manila Bethel Temple, now known as the Cathedral of Praise, a full gospel megachurch with more than 15,000 members and, as of this recording, 4 worship sites. Sumrall had since told Clarita's story many times at the pulpit of that church and in his many books before passing away in 1996. It's important to note that the aforementioned account was taken mostly from his sermons and writings, with only a few details from newspaper articles, as media interest in the story quickly faded due to Queen Elizabeth II's coronation on June 2, 1953. As with most of this sequence of events, what happened to Clarita after seems to have been documented only by Sumrall. According to his book titled Bitten by Devils, Clarita attended her vagrancy hearing at Manila's Court of First Instance a week after her exorcism. Judge Natividad Almeda Lopez ordered her to be sent to Welfareville, an institution in Mandaluyong for the care and custody of homeless and neglected children. There, Sumrall and Dr. Lara visited her twice, and everyone they spoke with said Clarita was a normal girl. Clarita herself was happy to see her two visitors, and she told them she had never been bothered by the two demons again. Clarita was eventually granted parole and was placed in the home of the Sadoras, a Christian family that Sumral knew. After some time, she left the Sadoras to move to a small town in northern Luzon, but the last thing anyone has heard about her was she had two children with a rice farmer in Bacolod City, back where she was first exposed to the occult, which many believe is a gateway to demonic possession. To support Stories After Dark, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also suggest cases or send personal stories to storiesafterdarkph@gmail.com and become an official patron at patreon.com/storiesafterdark. All of the links are in the episode description. Thank you for listening.